happy with the club. We're fairly healthy. I've liked the quality of the bats. I like some things we've done on defense. I thought the outfield played really well as far as cutting angles and cutting balls off and gaps, keeping guys to singles when they have a chance at doubles. In general, we played pretty good baseball. Obviously, there's always going to be mistakes, but I thought we've been fairly aggressive. Guys have worked, so in general, it's been a good camp.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Fish Bites, the Miami Herald's Miami Marlins podcast. Joined today by two very special and usual guests. First off, Andre Fernandez. How are you doing, Andre?
Hanging in there, man. Getting ready for the season.
Yep, we're almost there. And secondly, once again, joined by good old Craig Mish. Mr. Mish, how are you?
I'm very well, Jordan. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, of course. And guys, it's finally here. Opening day, just a few days away. First game's April 1st, Thursday, 4:10 p.m. against the Tampa Bay Rays. And we have some news as we get closer to it. Let's start off with the biggest news that came out of Monday. Sixto Sanchez, according to sources who told the Herald, Sixto starting at the alternate training site, which isn't really unexpected, but it's good to finally have that news out there. I mean, Sixto was delayed twice in camp, first by a visa issue, then a couple weeks later by a false positive COVID-19 test. He only threw 8 innings during Grapefruit League play, never threw more than 3 1/3 in a given outing. It was only up to about 60 pitches. They wanted him to be able to throw 5 and between 75 and 80 pitches. He wasn't there yet. So it's not a surprise, but again, now the news is out there. Just let's start with Craig. What's your initial response to this?
Yeah, I think that this was pretty obvious weeks ago, but I suppose it takes some things to be official or have the club say it in order to really have it sink home. The Marlins, they don't have this policy necessarily, but they have the belief, I guess is a better word, that they'd like to see their guys throw 20 innings in spring training at a minimum in order to be ready for the regular season. And so Sixto was not going to be there. But Jordan, the innings that you mentioned were very solid. He kind of, more or less looked like the player that we saw at least at the beginning of when he got called up last year. Now he'll go to the alternate site. He'll make, I would think, at least 2 starts would be my guess. And then, Jordan, Andre, I would say that, right around the timeline that I had about a month ago, I think that we'll see him either in the second or third week of the season. But make no mistake about it, this is also about limiting innings. And if the Marlins have belief that they can play into the postseason in October, you want to make sure that Sixto Sanchez is going to be there for you. And if you start him on opening day, then how are you going to get 150, 160 innings out of him starting right from the season in the big leagues? And I think that's part of it as well. So we'll just kind of have to see how the season plays out. From what I understand and what I'm told, the innings management is at that 150 to 160 with a possibility of 170. And so that essentially would have to mean that if the Marlins are headed toward the postseason or in it, you'll see him get to 150, 160. If they're not, I don't think you'll see him at the end of September.
Definitely on that. And with that first couple weeks, the Marlins have the luxury. Day 4, day 9, and day 19 are off days for them this regular season. That means that through the first 4 turns, they only need a 5th starter once, theoretically. So the fact that they can roll out a 4-man rotation and still have everybody more or less online with the exception of that one start on day 14, it gives them that chance to roll with, potentially stick with Sandy Alcantara, Pablo Lopez is the 1-2, and then Eliezer Hernandez and Trevor Rogers is the 3-4, and then just have to figure out how to go with that guy during the third turn to figure out that 5th spot. Andre, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, not much more to add. I mean, basically, that's a clue right there from the beginning, was that they have that schedule flexibility early on to do this. Nobody expected this wasn't going to be a 200 inning season or anything crazy like that. And like Craig said, yeah, you want to manage those innings. Even during the season, you're going to see some of that where maybe there's going to be some creative way of starting him, maybe if they are still in it and they're looking to keep him fresh going into September. And early on, let's say even you run into a case where there's an injury or someone gets lit up and comes out early, something like that. They have long relief options where they can mix and match and continue to manage that for the first couple of weeks until they feel like Sixto's ready. So really no surprise on that front.
Yeah. And then the other news that came out of camp on the final day of Grapefruit League play for the Marlins, General Manager Kim Eng announced that Jazz Chisholm will indeed be the starting second baseman to begin the year. Again, like the Sixto news, with the way he was playing the final couple weeks of spring training, it felt like a matter of time before that became public. It seemed like, again, it was between him and Eason Diaz. Eason will start in AAA and at the alternate site before that. But the way Jazz played, the energy he brought, and just the fact that it seemed like he was on that right trajectory, that also seemed like it was going to come into effect.
Yeah, I think it felt that way over the last week or so. I went back and forth on this for a while. I thought that coming into camp, the Jazz would win the job. But as tough as this is to say, I think that that is part of this equation. I also think Eason Diaz lost this job. He went 0 for 21 at the end of spring training. And look, there comes a time, and I understand that the organization is not going to throw their guys under the bus, but I mean, I have to keep it real. Eason did not have a good spring. I don't feel, even though their general manager, Kim Eng, said that he was unlucky, I don't feel that way. Was he unlucky on his last plate appearance that I saw where he hit the ball hard? I thought it was a hit. They called it an error. Of course, that was the case. But there isn't anyone that I've talked to on or off the field in that organization that thought that Eason had a good spring. I personally feel his future with the organization is in serious doubt, because if Jazz does play well, I don't think that even if Jazz was to move to shortstop, that they would hand the keys over second base to Eason in 2022. So I think that some real serious work is going to have to be done by him in the minor leagues. I do think he'll get another shot to play in the big leagues at some point somewhere, either in Miami or somewhere else. But this was arguably, to me, the biggest disappointment of the spring. Andre Jordan, guys, Jazz had no AAA experience. Eason Diaz got beat out by a player with no AAA experience. I just can't say that enough. It was his job to win, and he did not.
Well, Jazz's tools and his versatility, I think, showed. I mean, I think that's what we've expected from, we've been hoping to see from this kid. It's finally showing, and then that was his job to lose. You're right. And now they're saying they're going to give Eason Diaz reps at third. I mean, it's good to say that, but can he excel at third? Can he play well at third? That would increase his versatility. But I think this opens the door, like you're saying, in the long run. Now you look at second base down the road. Is that Jose Devers' job eventually? You know, is it for a guy like that or someone else coming up the pipe, or one of the middle infielders? Because Eason's not in good standing now in terms of what his future could be with the franchise. But, you know, we get to see Jazz, and we get to see how exciting this kid can be over a full season and beyond. You know, now we finally get a good look at him, and I think that's definitely one of the best results that have come out of this camp for the Marlins.
Yeah, and in terms of results from camp, I want to ask both of you guys, what was your biggest takeaway, or the player or spot that came out as the biggest surprise to you throughout this month and a half of spring training as we get forward into heading into the regular season?
I don't want to ruin it all, but we'll have a column in the Herald tomorrow about Anthony Bender and kind of how this all happened. So just stay tuned for that tomorrow. But it's really an intriguing story as to how he got to Miami and the negotiations that were going on with him, who in the organization found him, was involved in speaking to his representatives, and how they lured him to get to Miami. To me, that's the biggest surprise. Why is it the biggest surprise? Because I cover baseball and I never heard of the guy. I've never heard of him. I can't sit here and tell you that I knew who Anthony Bender was. And I feel like I have a good grip on not just 26, but like 40 guys deep. You could give me Seattle. I think I could name their team. But I had no idea who Anthony Bender was, and he was fantastic. So to me, that's the biggest surprise. And I think that anybody who follows me knows that I would love to see and find a way for Garrett Cooper to play every day. I don't know that that's in the cards. I mean, I think everybody knows that by now. But, I mean, not having the DH is certainly crushing. But how anybody could have had a better spring, I don't know, with his numbers both statistically and also the exit velocity off his bat. Aguilar has been really good too. I get it. I understand kind of what they're going through, Andre, but to me, I got to find a way to get Cooper as many at bats as possible this season. I have to find a way to do that. I don't know how the Marlins are going to do it, but that's what their goal is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, and it's a shame because I think by now DH should be universal for many reasons, not just this case. But I'm going to go with Zach Pop, and I know Jordan loves this kid. He loves what he saw in this kid all camp. He kept telling me about it, and I think, you know, the fact, not that he made the roster, because we knew with Rule 5 he probably would anyway, but just the performance and the value he could bring to this bullpen. You know, he looked solid. He looked sharp out there, you know, attacking the strike zone pretty much throughout every appearance he made. And again, it's a good addition and someone that they're going to need, you know, going forward to see if they can complement that rotation. So definitely, I think that's one of the pleasant surprises for them when it comes to a guy that was a little bit off the radar too.
And then for me, I'm going to go with a guy who was a little bit more known, made the debut last year, but the improvement of Trevor Rogers really stood out to me during camp. I mean, we knew he was competing for one of the back end spots, but 29 Ks in 19 innings. He's bulked up a little bit. Don Mattingly's mentioned just the growth of his neck, I think three or four or five different times. And he just seems to have found a groove. I need to see a little bit more of him when he has runners on base and he's pitching out of the stretch. That's really where he got hit hard last year, was when he didn't have the clean innings. But he passed the eye test, at least to me, early in camp, and or at least throughout camp. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he builds off of an up and down season last year and a pretty good spring this year as he goes into his first full season. And obviously just how they handle the rotation in general, I guess that sort of fits in as well. When you consider the fact that it's a lot of talent, a lot of young guys, but outside of Sandy Alcantara, they don't have anybody who's pitched a full season from start to finish. So how they handle that, how they handle moving guys up and down to make sure everyone stays fresh and makes it through the season. We already saw what they're doing with Sixto, but it just makes it very interesting to see how Mel Sotomayor Jr. can keep their innings in check, keep their performance in check, and find ways to make sure everybody's healthy from start to finish, which that's going to be a key for this team.
And that's where it's unfortunate what happened with Gio, because that was someone they were counting on to add some of that depth, especially starter innings, that sort of thing. And unfortunately, it didn't work out.
Yeah, I still think, you know, if I had to guess in terms of six through seven or eight, I suppose Nick Neidert ends up being their sixth starter.
Yeah.
Braxton Garrett would probably be their seventh. And I know that we've seen a lot of Daniel Castano, and maybe, you know, maybe he is their sixth, seventh, or eighth. But I think those three names, am I missing anyone? I hope not. I think
those are the main three.
I think those, like, if we're going deeper, that's kind of the way that we're going with that. And then, you know, I don't think Ross Detweiler will start, but he has started in the past. And then, of course, at some point, guys, we'll be asking Donnie, will they use an opener? It happens every year. They never do. But I guess that's also a possibility. But Jordan, you're right also on Trevor Rogers. That's the one player I would say from my contacts within the organization universally that everyone is the most excited about going into the season. And if I'm not mistaken, barring some miracle, we'll get to see him Sunday against the Rays. So super excited to be at that game.
Definitely. And with the opener, they have John Curtis, who did it last year. And they also potentially have that swingman with Paul Campbell, who was a starter in the minor league. I know they're going to probably have to use him as long relief primarily, but there is also potentially the opportunity, if they need to have him make emergency starts as well. And he'll already be on the 26 man.
Yeah, and you know, it's listen, I mean, the way that the Marlins are positioned and the way that the roster is positioned, there's no doubt that I'll be more bullish on them this year than I have probably in the last 3 or 4 years. It just I've watched a lot of the games either in person or on television as much as I can. This has been a tough spring for me and really for everyone. We can't get in front of any players, executives, scouts, nothing. It's been extremely difficult only to watch. I'm not huge on results, but someone told me the other day that, and I haven't put this out there yet, it's just interesting, that 7 of the last 12 teams in spring training play that have finished with a 70% win percentage have made the postseason in that year. So if we're hanging on to something going into the year of a stat or a figure, I was told that is the case. So I think they're going to be competitive. I think that this is going to be a fun year. And I don't know how far we're going to go. I guess, guys, my hesitation to go all in is something that I've been kind of thinking and talking about a little bit more. I'd love to get your guys' opinion on this too, is that the reason why I can't say that I think they're going to win like 85 games or 86, because I believe they can. Like, I kind of do believe that they have that possibility in them. My fear is that you look at the division and they're sitting there on July 31st, guys. And there's two teams, let's just say two teams ahead of them in the division, and there are several games out, and there's not that expanded postseason. Do they go in that room, guys, and say, okay, Dickerson's a free agent, Marte's a free agent, Duvall's, you know, we can, you know, maybe move him, Anthony Bass. If they do that, what does that team look like in August and September, right? Like, they don't have guys to come up immediately, maybe JJ Bleday, but they don't have a lot of replacement level players that can make me think that would make them a 500 team or better. That's my fear. I don't know if that's quantified, but that's why I'm not just sort of all in on it, because it may be the right move. That may be the right move on July 31st to move your expiring contract players and then go back all in 2022. But that's kind of where I'm at with the season. I think they're going to be good. I don't think they're going to be great. But I can't give them the postseason unless I knew you could tell me on August 1st the team would look the same.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you there, Craig. It really is. It's a catch-22, a double-edged sword, whichever cliche phrase you want to use with it. And also a couple other guys, Jesus Aguilar last year before free agency, Yimmy Garcia last year before free agency. They have a lot of pieces they could move. And again, we know that they're going to want to see the kids at some point, but if they're in contention and they've been harping all spring that they're in playoff mode, they're in that push for playoffs, it's hard for them to outwardly justify making all the moves like that if they're as close as your hypothetical puts them. If they fall flat and they're 15, 16 games under 500, yeah, we could easily see something by the trade deadline. But if they're within, I would want to say probably at least if they're within 5 games of a wild card spot, that's really where it puts them in that conundrum. And it's
tough.
It's very tough.
What do you think, Andre?
I think that is the right move. I think that will be the right move. And it will be the move they'll have to do probably, because that's probably where they're going to be when it comes to July 31st because of how stacked this division is. And we still have to see if this offense really can click when it counts against the tough pitching they're going to face night in and night out from the division, from other teams around the National League. If it does come together, I think they will be competitive. I'm hesitant to go that far on the win mark. I'm thinking somewhere in the 70s just because of all those factors. And because if they do make that move, the bottom could fall out quick in August and September, affecting that win total. But they're just going to have to prove to everybody, you know, that they can overachieve if they are going to make some kind of a run. But the win total is not going to reflect how competitive this team is. I think they proved that last year no matter what. And I think the way that they attack, the way that they're aggressive on the base paths, you've seen, you know, some of those factors, the way they hit, the way they pitch, they'll be in a lot of games, even if they even if they're close to defeats, let's say, against some of these teams, because I mean, look at the rotations they're going to be up against night in and night out. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, definitely. But it will make for an interesting season, whichever way it goes. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have a one-on-one interview with Miguel Rojas that I was able to do back on Saturday. So we'll get Miggy Rowe's opinion on the club and their 2021 expectations when we come back. Thanks so much, Jez.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back, everyone. For the second half of our Marlins opening day preview edition of the Fish Bites podcast, we have a special guest joining us. I had the chance to talk one-on-one with Marlins shortstop and de facto team captain Miguel Rojas this weekend to get his thoughts on the 2021 Marlins, building his brand off the field, and his plans for both the immediate and long-term future. Without further ado, here's Miguel Rojas. I'm going to start off a little bit on the fun side. We've seen your ability to be an interviewer and an interviewee from the Super Bowl and then what our interactions with you. You're on the podcast now. You've done the TV analyst stuff. Should I be worried for my job right now?
Well, you know what? I've been thinking about a lot of things that I can do after baseball. I'm not thinking about that far ahead yet. But I don't want to close doors, so I always like to keep them open. I get my feet wet and everything that I can because I just want to keep learning, you know, from a lot of different things that I do, you know, like understanding what you guys are going through, you know, as well. And that way I can be better when I'm asking questions, when I'm trying to help my teammates prepare for an interview or whatever it is. So. I just like to do different stuff off the field, so that way I can continue to grow and be better overall, not just a baseball player, but in the game of baseball. You never know what's gonna happen after. I definitely want to manage. I want to be a manager of a team one day, but at the end of the day, who knows what's gonna happen after my baseball career?
Have you talked with Donnie about what it takes to be a manager, what goes into it, the intricacies with all that? I mean, I know how close the two of you are.
Yeah, 100%. I talk to Donnie at least once or two times a year about managing, about who he learned from, the good things that Yogi Berra talked to him about, the good things about Joe Torre, the good managers that he's been around, and a lot of things that he picked from those guys, and now I have the opportunity to pick the brain of Don Mattingly. And the most important thing is being yourself, right? But you get a lot of knowledge from other people, and that's going to make you a complete, not just a manager, but a complete person, a baseball person.
Yeah, and to go into the bigger thing with everything that you're doing off the field, what is it like being able to see the Miggy Rowe brand start to grow between the podcast, the shoe collection, and seeing that people outside of Miami are starting to recognize who Miguel Rojas is?
Yeah, it's important. It's not just for me or my family. It's for the organization as well, you know, like you always do. Your stuff, and you're not thinking about just yourself. You're just thinking about who you're representing, where you're playing, trying to like bring more fans to our open and follow our organization. That's the main goal right here, you know, because, I mean, I'm going to make the name, like, for myself playing baseball, you know. Like, if I perform on the field, people are going to follow me. But at the end of the day, it's bigger than just your name. It's who you're representing, where you're coming from. I want people to know about Venezuela. I want people to know about Miami. So that's why I'm doing all this stuff, so they know where I'm come from and, like, how hard I've been working to be in the position that I'm at right now.
Yeah, and you touched on fans. What's that going to be like to finally have them back in the ballpark after not having them last year while you guys made that run? What is it going to be like to see them when you get back in the field April 1st? And then secondly, how awkward, weird, eerie was it last year to be making the run you guys did without them in the ballpark with you?
Yeah, it's going to be exciting, man. I'm excited to see all the faces around me again, the guys I've been there for the years that I've been here, you know, like it's been a long time, since I get here in 15. And, I feel like a special connection now with fans that I have to, stay home and enjoy what we did last year from home. Hopefully we get a lot of fans in the stadium, the capacity, we don't know what's going to be, but, at the end of the day, we're excited to play with fans again because, yeah, like you say, it was pretty weird last year. It was different. We have to bring energy from our teammates, from our families. You know, it was a different kind of motivation. When you go to a baseball game and you have the fans there, that's the special adrenaline that you have every single night or every single day. And we're asking for the fans to bring it this year because we're going to be prepared. We're going to be ready for an exciting year.
And on that note, how important was for you, Django, you did the clubhouse presented by Budweiser last year, and just how important was it for you to find that way to bring the fans in when they weren't able to physically be there with you?
Yeah, I mean, that was an idea while quarantining. You know, a lot of people was doing a lot of Instagram lives, ways to communicate with fans while they were home quarantining, and I thought it was a great idea, you know, because I even as a human being, I was enjoying that kind of content. So I brought the idea to the marketing and to our social media personnel, and they liked the idea and connecting with fans. We had a lot of new players last year who made the debut, and we got the opportunity to talk to them, you know. And, I mean, all the guys that haven't made the debut yet, like Max Meyer, J.J. Blede, we talked to a lot of those guys, and fans at least want to have the they already introduced themselves to fans, and now when they get to the big leagues that I'm pretty sure they're going to make, they're going to be knowing. And that's what that was one of my goals, and keep the fans involved in whatever we did last year.
Definitely. And now to move forward to the season, give me the Miguel Rojas breakdown of this 2021 Marlins team. What should people be knowing about? What are the reasons for optimism? And just what's the vibe of the group as you guys get ready for opening day in a couple days?
Yeah, our expectations are high, man. We're not going to sell ourselves short or we're not going to be afraid of the task of this division. We're going to be prepared. We're going to be ready for what we want to accomplish, which is, do what we did last year. Make it to the playoff, just go there and compete every single day. And we know it's going to be a big fight, you know, everybody's going to be, beating each other up in this division because everybody's good, but we're counting on our starting pitcher. It's amazing. I can put it on this league, on this division with any other team because these guys are talented. So I'm pretty excited about the team and what's gonna happen this year. We never know what the results are gonna be, but at the end of the day, the most important thing is we're prepared, we're ready, and we're not afraid of what we got in front of us. About me and personally, I just wanna help the team win again. Do everything that I can to make everybody around me better and try to help people to get better every single day. That's my goal. And in the personal thing, I just want to go to the playoff and see how far we can go.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. After making it to the playoffs and then losing in the divisional round, how much have you been itching to just get back on the field and prove to everybody that it wasn't a fluke that you guys made just because it was a 60-game schedule, expanded playoffs, yada, yada, yada? How much are you ready to prove that you guys can do that over the course of 162?
Oh, to be honest with you, we're already proven it, you know. 11-5, I think, in spring training, playing really good baseball. I mean, our guys, top of the ERA in a spring training, I know these numbers don't count, and I don't pay that much attention to these numbers because we're preparing for a long season. But at the end of the day, man, it's baseball. You know, you got to go out there and win games every single day. It doesn't matter if it's Little League, T-ball, whatever it is. You're winning baseball games, that means your team is better than the other team. And that's happening right now. I think we set the tone last year in spring training, and we're doing the same right this year, and we can't wait to start the year on Thursday. Not putting any pressure on ourselves because no one's picking up to win, so we just got to go out there and show that what happened last year wasn't just coincidence or a fluke.
And now from a personal standpoint, since you took over as the everyday shortstop in 2019, we've known what you've been able to do on defense, but we've really seen the offense pick up on your end. Is there anything you can attribute to that from what we've seen from you at the plate over the last 2 years? Is it a matter of just being out there every day, having that comfortability of knowing you're in the lineup, or was there anything else that you were able to do to get your swing right and be able to start producing more out there at the plate?
Yeah, I think I continue to learn every single year, man. To be honest with you, I feel like every experience that you have teach you something and give you the opportunity to make adjustments. So I've been making a lot of adjustments to my swing. I know how get myself back when I'm slumping or when I'm not doing that good. I know what drills I can do in the cage to get back to the hitter that I know I can be. And for me, as a goal, I think I just want to be a big hitter, you know, not just a guy who can hit for power or just put the ball in play or not striking out much and walking. I just want to be that complete player. I can do a lot and something that I probably going to be a lot hitting eight this year. You know, we're not going to have the DH. It's going to be challenging task for me again, hitting eight in front of the pitcher. But I think I'm capable, and I know how to take the responsibility there and actually, like, get my ass as productive as I can and continue to get better every single day because that's how you continue to get better.
Yeah, and just your thoughts on the lineup overall. I mean, you guys are basically the same group that you were last year with the addition of Adam Duvall as the only difference between what you guys had towards the, at the end of last season. How much do you think that continuity is going to help, knowing that basically everybody already knows what everyone wants to do with the plate? You know how each other is going to work. You guys basically know what your lineup's going to look like every day. How much does that continuity help, especially over the course of a long season?
Yeah, you got to give credit to the coaching staff. You know, the coaches are doing a great job communicating with us, telling us where we're going to be so we can be prepared. You know, nothing here that's happening here happened for, it's a surprise, you know, happening for a reason. You know where you're going to be. And that's the way that you should feel, you know, you should feel like you're prepared for every single opportunity. And I think that this lineup is going to be a force. And I said it before because we got a lot of ways to score runs. I think, Starling Marte healthy in the middle of that lineup is going to be huge for the whole year for us. We knew that he was a great player, but now seeing him on an everyday basis, it's unbelievable. The guy can run, the guy can for power, the guy got a lot of gold glove defense. So for me, having him right there in the two hole every single day is really, really important because he can do a lot of things for us. And well, you know how it is, Aggie Cook, mm-hmm. The guy that driving me in the wrongs are there. And I think our lineup is so deep that we can move guys up and down. But at the end of the day, it's all the credit to the coaches for getting us ready and preparing us for the year.
Yeah, and then on the prospect side, I want to just get your thoughts on a couple of the middle infielders in Jose Devers and Nassim Nunez. What have you seen out of both of them during camp, and what really stands out about both of those guys?
Yeah, those two guys, especially in this camp, they under 20 years old. Remember, like, these guys are so young, and sometimes it's hard to put in perspective that these guys are in big league camp, playing against big league pitchers and competing against the best in the world, and they under 20 years old. And that's amazing. That's something that it surprised me, the way that they carry themselves already. So really impressive that the depth that we have. It's not just them. We got Ian Lewis coming for minor league spring training and starting soon. We got other guys, Palace from Venezuela, really excited about that kid too. I mean, the future looks bright, and it's not just pitching or hitting on shortstop. It's overall, you know, our organization did a great job acquiring all this talent a couple years ago, and now we're seeing that they're getting closer. So I feel like myself need to get better, because if not, these guys are going to really soon.
Yeah, no, definitely. I've got two more questions for you, Miggy. First off, now that you've had some chance for some face-to-face interaction, what's been your early impressions of new GM Kim Ang, and just what have your interactions been like with her over camp?
Yeah, it's been really fluid, really good. Kim has been available every single day for us, and one of the things that I pay attention, even when we have all these protocols and the COVID restrictions and all that, you know, like, we can be like on the same place, like we used to be with GMs and the personnel that work in the front office. She's always around. She's always watching BP. She's always in the game, in the, almost in the first row, you know, and that's important to me. And for me, that's everything, because, you know, she's caring about their players, and the way that she's watching everything from firsthand. That's for me. That's important. And availability, like, if she's there, we're always gonna have questions for her, and our communication is gonna be fine just because she's always around. And it's been amazing, and it's been a really good support.
Definitely. And then last one, can you just walk us through the position you're in right now? You're in the last year of your contract. I know you have the option for 2022. Have you started thinking about what could be next, or is there any way, or are you going to try to find a way to stay with the Marlins if you can next year? Is there anything you can give us on that front?
Yeah, if I want to be here out the team when everything started 4 years ago, great. But it's been a long time now, right? If I wanted to be here in 2018, even more now in 2021, I would be here for the rest of my career. I always said it, and I'm not saying just for my mouth out. That's what I feel in my heart. My family and the people in South Florida know that I want to stay here. I know this is a year where I have this option for next year, but organization knows, and everybody knows that the way that I feel about this organization, and now more than ever, I want to spend the good times and the good years that are ahead. I want to spend it here in Miami. Hopefully, I can stay here, and hopefully, I can see and I can be part of a championship team.
Definitely, that's everything. Thank you so much, as always, Miggy. I always appreciate talking with you, and fingers crossed, we'll be able to see each other in person at some point this season.
I know, Jordan. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Fish Bites. Thanks so much again for listening. And when we return next week, we'll have live, actual, regular season games to talk about. But between now and then, make sure to check out the Miami Herald website for all of our coverage. Thanks so much, and we'll be back again next week.